This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today we're talking about the nurse staffing shortage and how it's impacting our nurses and hospitals across the state. But first, we'll talk about what's going on at nursing schools right now with Robin Newhouse, Dean of the IU School of Nursing on the IUPUI campus. Welcome, Robin.
It's a pleasure to talk with you.
What does the nursing curriculum typically look like for IU nursing students prior to the pandemic, let's say?
So prior to the pandemic, we admitted students in their second year, so they've had their prerequisites, and they spend 3 years with us, a full-time study in the undergraduate program until they graduate. Those curriculum includes both didactic, which gives them the basis that they need for anatomy, physiology, pharmacology, et cetera, as well as clinical practice in multiple settings, both in hospitals and community settings. So that would be the typical university experience for undergraduate registered nurses.
Well, how has the pandemic changed the way nursing students are taught?
Well, I think initially the shock of being able to teach the program virtually was really important to us. So immediately last March in 2020, when we knew that being virtual would be the right thing to do to protect the health of our students, faculty, and staff, we were very well suited, actually, because many of our faculty over decades have been edge runners in the area of online and virtual education. So many of us had some substantial skills in being able to deliver education in that way. So when I think of a virtual education, and we use the word online, we may be talking about asynchronous, where you are taking a course that might have videos, teaching learning strategies, cases that you need to respond to, but you're not interacting with a faculty member. But it also includes a synchronous mechanism by which sometimes it's just like being in a classroom where lectures are delivered, there's interactions, there are strategies that are employed to discuss a case or a method or a specific area of study. And it's interactive, and the exams also can be delivered online, but you still have that interactive experiences. So we had a blend of those kinds of opportunities for students, and that did change pretty abruptly. And I would also say that many students had not had any exposure to online learning because they have come from high school, they have had in-person courses in their first year, and here they are in nursing school, which is a clinical practice, and they are now facing some online learning. So it was new for them too. So I would say that we were very careful to make sure that we attended to the student experience, that we talked together as faculty so that we planned high quality delivery of education. We always look to our program outcomes and assure that our program outcomes are embedded in the teaching learning strategy and objectives in each course. So we were very careful to assure that we were giving them the education, both the knowledge and the practice experience that they needed to graduate as a nurse. And that also included simulation experiences as well, and other forms of online learning.
Well, we have a clip from Taylor Blankenhorn, a nursing student from IUPUC, talking about how clinicals are going for her.
As far as COVID goes, we're not really doing a whole lot of hands-on with patients, but it definitely affects the learning experience, I'd say, especially as many COVID patients that are coming in right now, numbers are just going up. So not having that hands-on experience with certain patients because of COVID is unfortunate.
When it comes to clinicals and not having hands-on experience due to COVID, what does this mean for the future of how students are taught? Does it have any effect on what they're learning?
Interestingly enough, there have been studies over time about the use of simulation as a substitute or a complement of clinical learning. And there are studies that support that up to 50% of the clinicals could be actually taught by simulation. You've got to remember that simulation is not just a mannequin in a room anymore. We have high fidelity simulation who respond, who can react, that can be tailored to provide different simulations within that experience. So not only did our students have the didactic, but they also had some high fidelity simulation experiences, as well as clinicals. Clinicals were prohibited for a while when the surges were high, but we also have to remember that we were able to provide clinical experiences over time as well. So it wasn't as if during that period of time that we needed to assure that all of the hospitals were caring first and foremost for the patients, and the personal protective equipment was being provided to the people that were providing clinical care. I think once things stabilized and we were able to open up to make sure that the students got the clinical experience as well. So our students were very well prepared actually for the clinical environment. We got good feedback. We have high pass rates for the licensing exam as well. So we actually saw that although it wasn't what we wanted to do, which, you know, we wanted that the clinicals and the in-person experiences for our students, we really desired for them to be the same as they were when we were in person. But knowing that the safe way to educate really became the primary motive in this work, and students did well.
The high fidelity simulations definitely caught my attention. Because back in the day when I was in school, I remember folks that were taking medical or nursing tracks had actors, I think, that would work with them. So that's really interesting to be able to have a simulation that can kind of go through the steps.
Yes, well, you're right. We have standardized patients too. So I think that is another alternative. But when we're trying to make sure that we are, we have students that are completely protected, that they have the mask and the gowns that they need in all of these experiences, we were very much attending to making sure we were spaced correctly and that we were applying all of the safe practices that we possibly could, and did not introduce any situations where there were large bodies of people together in a small space.
Well, it sounds like these nursing students are sort of at the forefront of something brand new, being trained during a pandemic and sort of learning how to navigate that. Would you say that's something they're experiencing?
I think so. This is something that they'll have a story to tell about their experience while they were in nursing school and how things shifted very quickly, and wearing masks in the classroom as well as in the environment. And I think the other thing that's happened is that the governor created an executive order where our students that graduated during the pandemic could apply for a temporary license and actually be hired directly, which actually worked very well too. So there are things that happen that the students rose to that experience to serve and get started with their career early in organizations where they plan to work in the future. So I think there were some pretty innovative things that happened.
With innovation, there's also been talk of shortages, nursing shortages, or academia shortages of faculty. Are you seeing that at all?
So I would say nationally, yes. Nationally, we have seen the faculty shortage. And I would say the American Association of Colleges of Nursing did some surveys in 2019-2020, and did find that, number one, nursing schools were turning away a large amount of students, and second of all, that there were over 1,600 faculty vacancies in about 900 schools. So that was prevalent. I would say that we at IU are not at this time experiencing a faculty shortage. We have certainly different faculty that work clinically sometimes than those that are working didactically, but the faculty shortage is real, and part of it is because there are not as many people coming into education as a professional career, and part of it is due to a salary differentiation, I would say. Because in clinical practice, nurses have higher salaries and they tend to be lower in the academic environment. So that's one thing. And I think the other major contributing factor is age. So many of the faculty are getting older and they're retiring. So these are factors that we're seeing, but nonetheless, others, we are finding that we have people that would like some kinds of joint appointments for faculty, and they'll stay in clinical for a period of time. We have models where people would like to be faculty and maybe do one day a week in the clinical environment. So we're starting to see some innovative models, and certainly are working with any innovative solution that we can possibly find. But yeah, yes, you're right. I think the nation has experienced a decrease in people that are coming into the academic environment. And I think those are the two major factors, the money and the aging of our faculty, that have been the major contributors.
Well, we have another clip from Taylor Blankenhorn, a nursing student from IUPUC, talking about her future.
I've kind of been in the nursing like career for a while, so it's definitely my passion and what I want to do. But I'd say COVID's kind of taken a toll on everyone, but I'm hopeful and I'm sticking with it.
And again, that was Taylor Blankenhorn, a nursing student from IUPUC, talking about her future. We'll be back after a quick break with Robin Newhouse, Dean of the IU School of Nursing on the IUPUI campus. We're talking about the nurse staffing shortage and the impact of the pandemic on hospitals right now. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe, but we're talking today about the nurse staffing shortage we're seeing across the country and how nurses are doing right now. If you have any questions or comments on the topic, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. We're continuing our conversation with Robin Newhouse, the dean of the IU School of Nursing on the IUPUI campus. Robin, are you hopeful that the shortage of nurses and faculty can be fixed in the near future?
I am certain that together we can figure this out. There's a lot more to a nurse than a number. So when we think about the nursing shortage, I think there are a lot of additional questions we've got to ask. It's not just, do we have the bolus of nursing? Can we train more nurses? But we've got to think about these other kinds of factors, which include, are we allowing nurses to work to the full scope of their practice? That's advanced practice nurses and nurses that are baccalaureate nurses. How will we deploy nurses to focus on some of the stickiest issues we're facing in our community around equity, our differences in treatment? How can we deploy nurses to work at the full scope of their responsibility in all settings, both the community setting and the hospital setting? How can we create workplaces where nurses want to stay in place and progress throughout a career in nursing? How can we set up these? I could talk for probably all day about how we can solve this problem. These are known factors. And I think when we hear about the nursing shortage and think that a nurse can be counted, there is so much science and so much skill and so much analysis and critical thinking that a nurse has when they leave our programs, that they are really ready to do far more than nursing is doing now. So I think we have to create a new vision together and a new future together. And it's going to take us all and us to partner with our new evolving nurses and nurse leaders about how we can create a space and a place for nursing to grow and nursing to contribute. It only takes an admission to the intensive care unit to see how the registered nurses are assessing, are planning, are relieving symptoms, are working with families, to understand how important a nurse is. And that's just not in the critical care setting, but I would say if you see the news stories that they're very often, that's the setting they're in. But it's also on medical surgical floors. Nurses have a big responsibility for alleviation of symptoms, for decreasing risk, decreasing injury, and advocating for patients. There's a science and an art to it, and we need to free nursing to work to their full scope of responsibility. And I think it's not just in education and creating nurses, but it's in the clinical arena too. And I'll just mention that during the pandemic, we did a survey of 16 Midwest hospitals, over 6,000 nurses, to ask them about what they were experiencing in the clinical environment. And, you know, they were experiencing innovations. They were experiencing innovations about personal protective equipment, how to manage them, how to use them, how to sort of have some efficiency in donning all of the protective equipment they were using. They had ideas about how to ensure a safer space, how to conserve supplies, how to provide patient and family education, for example, and team member communications. So there is so much innovation that's happening now, both in the clinical arena. These nurses are on their feet, standing and innovating every moment of the day. So I think that although we think about the pandemic and we think about some of the stress that all have encountered during the pandemic, the innovative minds of nurses, both in the clinical environment and in the academic environment, are both a signal of we will be champions in nursing and champions certainly for the provision of clinical care and patients. And there's lots of innovation that's going on, even at this very difficult time.
Thank you so much for joining us. Robin Newhouse is the dean of the IU School of Nursing on the IUPUI campus. We're talking today about the field of nursing and how it's been hit by the pandemic, and in particular, the nursing shortage we've been hearing about. With us now are Amy Pettit, Vice President of Patient Care Services and Chief Nursing Officer at Schneck Medical Center in Seymour, and Rachel Spaulding, Chief Nursing Officer at Good Samaritan Hospital in Vincennes. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
It's great to be here.
Amy, how long has this shortage been going on? It sounds like it's something fairly recent due to the pandemic, but was it something that was already happening?
I think when you look at the information that's provided nationwide, there has always been some form of a nursing shortage. So when you look at individuals who are in the field, those individuals who may be retiring or maybe wanting to get out of direct patient care areas, we can see and map out that we're not producing enough nurses in academia in order to fill those open gaps. What COVID and the pandemic has done is that it has sped up that process and caused it to be much more prevalent.
And Rachel, what are some of the reasons we're seeing a nursing shortage aside from folks not going into academia to teach? Is there anything else?
Yeah, so Amy talked about nursing shortage existed before the COVID pandemic. Nursing shortage has always been, at the forefront of most conferences and topics surrounding the nursing profession for some time. And, you know, we've always had, issues with, as Amy mentioned, we have an aging workforce. So the, average age of a nurse, particularly in Indiana and around the nation, is around 49 years of age. And so, we've had this onslaught of retirement that's happened, and COVID-19 has accelerated those early retirements. And also we've, really struggled to have enough faculty nationwide in order to increase the class sizes. And, in 2020, it's been estimated that over 80,000 qualified nursing school applicants have been turned away from programs because we don't have enough faculty to teach. And there's been some issues with class sizes across the country. So this has been an ongoing issue. But of course, the COVID-19 pandemic has just accelerated those issues.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like the pandemic just made things worse that were already kind of on that trajectory. Well, Amy, what are some of the biggest impacts you've seen the shortage have on hospitals right now?
I think currently, especially with the Delta variant that has really looked at increasing the prevalence of COVID positive patients in our regions and throughout the state. What we are seeing is that a lot of organizations are having to go on diversion where they just don't have beds. And it's not that they don't have beds. They don't have staff a lot of times to be able to staff those rooms. Organizations and healthcare organizations are going on diversion. So we are having difficulty transferring people to a higher level of care. So that's creating more wait times, having to cancel surgeries or even clinic appointments at different times throughout the pandemic. All of those things impact the general health of our population, because if you're not seeking preventative care, then it could be that you're putting off problems into the future that only make those problems worse. So all of that has been impacted.
And Rachel, what does an understaffed shift look like for our listeners to sort of put themselves in the shoes of these nurses?
Yeah, and Amy said it very well, is that we're continuing to see high numbers of patients that need medical care for COVID or COVID-like symptoms. And then, we see the volume data that suggests we're seeing similar volumes to pre-pandemic surge. And it doesn't represent the fact that hospitals across the state and across the country, they're operating with less staff while seeing an increasing number of COVID admissions that have very high acuity. And when we say high acuity, that means the resources required to care for those patients have gone up significantly because their severity of illness has gone up. And so what that does is that really requires staff in all professions, particularly nursing, but all disciplines, that we're having to give each patient more time, more of our assessment skills, our critical thinking skills, everything that we need to be able to ensure we're giving them high quality care. And so when you don't have the ideal number of nurses needed to care for a large number of patients that have very high acuity, like Amy said, it's not that we necessarily don't have physical capacity, but our resource capacity has changed, and therefore we can't really accept more patients. And so that does put more stress on staff at the bedside, because they have such a high expectation of the care they want to provide on each shift, and they're doing everything they can to meet that, and that can become very stressful.
I mean, yeah, that's got to be tough, knowing that you want to provide all the help that you can, but the resources just aren't there.
Absolutely.
Well, we have a clip from Jennifer Holtman, a registered nurse working in critical care at Schneck Medical Center, who tells us about the most challenging experience for her working during the pandemic. Let's take a listen.
Well, probably the most challenging thing for me was I was a surgery nurse for multiple years. And when COVID happened, I volunteered to come back out to the floors, ended up in the ICU, and had about 2 days of training trying to learn how to operate different equipment and vents. So that was probably the most challenging thing for me, stepping out into a different area and having to learn something completely different that was not something I had ever dealt with before.
Amy, is this something a lot of nurses have had to experience, particularly during the pandemic, having to sort of expand their horizon?
Absolutely. In fact, with the higher numbers of COVID that we're seeing right now with this second surge, we're redeploying nurses from many different departments. You know, one of the great things that I always loved about nursing is that as a nurse, I can work in a lot of different departments. I could be front-facing patients in the medical, surgical, or critical care areas. I could be a nurse in IT, or I could be in a physician clinic. But with these increasing number of patients, and again, with the higher level of acuity, we're having to go and get those people that have moved on and advanced their career in other areas, and we're bringing them back to the patient bedside. So yes, we are absolutely seeing this very frequently within our organizations.
If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Well, Amy, just to sort of follow up a little bit more on this, what is happening at your hospital right now? Are you seeing the effects firsthand?
Yes, we absolutely are seeing the effects firsthand. We have not only are things opening back up and people getting out and getting back to normal, so you have all of the typical patients that you would have, but with this surge, and according to the Indiana Department of Health statistics, we won't peak with the second surge until the end of September. We are already seeing about half of the patients that are hospitalized with COVID, about half of them have COVID. And so the increased volumes are playing a toll. We are even pulling and offering office staff and other employees who work throughout the organization to come and learn how to be support staff for nurses so that we can get nurses to really focus on those patients. We are doing that every single shift.
Rachel, what about you, the hospital you're working at? How has the shortage affected your hospital specifically?
Yeah, very similar to Amy. We are seeing high acuity, like we talked about. That means people requiring more resources. And, you know, nurses have experienced moral distress. And what moral distress is, it's that gap between what you want to do, but not having the resources or things being out of our control to be able to really follow through on what we want to do. And that's been really why we've seen, staff and nurses in particular leave the bedside. But what we can do is, like Amy talked about, we are taking staff from all over various clinical areas and pulling them into the inpatient setting for that direct patient care. And also, you know, we created a program called the Support Buddy Program, and that's where all staff across the hospital have an opportunity to fill out a profile to say, these are the skill levels I have, or these are the skill levels I need, so that I can be helpful to my bedside caregivers and really step in and be able to help them out during their shift. And they have just been really a great, phenomenal support, not only of helping facilitate clinical care, but also providing moral and emotional support to our staff, which is so important right now, and the well-being of our nursing staff. But I think what we need for the public to understand is that we're doing the very best we can. And there really is a national crisis with nursing shortage. And we really have to speak up about what the short-term and long-term implications are, and what are some of the interventions that we can ask legislators and others to really step forward and help us with this moving forward.
Well, speaking of the national crisis, I know the American Nurses Association urged the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services last week to declare this nursing shortage a national crisis. Amy, what does that mean if it becomes labeled officially as a national crisis, or has it been?
I don't believe it has been at this point, but I think what that means for nurses is that there could be some opportunity to really support the work that the nurse does. I think we have to remember that we can look at this in a broad spectrum, and you can look at not only nursing faculty, that it might be that, you know, Dr. or Dean Newhouse talked about the salary differential earlier in the program. And when you talk about that salary differential, having this declared an emergency could mean that that gap could close. I currently teach at IUPUC in Columbus, and the reason I teach nurses is because I need nurses and they need faculty. So the shortage is real. And I have quite a few of my staff that are also trying to teach while managing full-time jobs here in healthcare. And again, we're doing this because we know how important it is that we graduate these new nurses so that they can come and join us in the field. So I think that's one area. The second area that can be looked at is really the loan payback. I think there's a great opportunity to have some type of a loan forgiveness for nurses when they graduate. If they work in direct patient care or in the nursing field for an extended period of time, then what can happen is there could be some form of loan forgiveness if this were to be declared a national emergency.
And before we head to break real quick, Rachel, what are hospitals like right now, aside from the shortage? Are they seeing anything else that would be cause for concern?
Yes, I think one of the things that are major causes for concern is that across Indiana and across the country, we are doing our very best to meet the needs of our communities and all that come to us. And, you know, we, from a capacity standpoint, our resources are tapped out. And what Amy talked about, diversion, you know, a lot of times we'll go on diversion saying, you know, right now we can accept patients because we've met our capacity from a resource standpoint. And right now you'll notice across the state and across the country, a lot of hospitals are on diversion. And what that means is it doesn't mean that, you know, just because you have a heart attack or a stroke, this isn't necessarily just pertaining to COVID and treating you for COVID, but if you come to an ER, you know, in the state of Indiana, that may be experiencing some of the staffing issues.
And we'll jump back on that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll pick up on the diversion. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're discussing the impact of the pandemic and the nursing shortage on hospitals and nurses right now. Before the break, we were getting into the topic of hospitals having to go on diversion. With us are Amy Pettit, Vice President of Patient Care Services and Chief Nursing Officer at Schneck Medical Center in Seymour, and Rachel Spaulding, Chief Nursing Officer at Good Samaritan Hospital in Vincennes. Rachel, can you tell us about diversion? I apologize for cutting you off there, but let's pick back up where we were.
Yeah, so a lot of hospitals are experiencing the need to go on diversion because they don't have the resources to meet the capacity. Because I think I talked about earlier, we're seeing similar volumes to pre-pandemic surge, but it doesn't represent the fact that hospitals across the state are really operating with less staff while seeing an increasing number of COVID admissions that are very ill. But we also have our regular types of admissions for heart attacks, for stroke, for various other reasons, still coming into the hospital. And so, you know, it's very concerning because as we, our capacity diminishes because we're using more and more resources, it may make it extremely difficult to move patients throughout the hospital system. It could create delays and bottlenecks in our emergency departments. And ultimately, we're all trying to reduce delays in care with the situations we currently have and our ability to transfer patients out. So we're in a rural area. And so if we have someone that comes in with a greater need at a tertiary center, you know, we might not be able to get them transferred in the manner that we want to because those hospitals are experiencing the same capacity and resource issues.
Well, we have a clip here from Christy Day, the housing supervisor at Schneck Medical Center. Let's take a listen.
Coping with the pandemic with healthcare workers is we have to rely on each other because, as you know, outside of healthcare, you have a lot of misguided information. So it's not easy for us as healthcare workers to go home and talk to our families and friends that aren't involved in healthcare because they just don't understand or they're just not educated in it. So what they may see on TV is not necessarily what's true. So we've done a lot of coping with each other.
So it sounds like there's a lot of support amongst nurses with each other. Amy, what have you heard from your staff nurses? How are they doing?
I think right now, a lot of the staff would say that they feel tired, possibly defeated, because I think what we as nurses do is we care for patients and we want to take the very best care of our patients and make sure that they're doing exactly what they need to do to make sure that they get well. We want to see them get well on the at the point of discharge. But I think it's very difficult, and it has been very difficult, to see that patients have not been getting the vaccine, which we know is proven to prevent COVID. And if you do get COVID and you've been vaccinated, the symptoms are less. That patients aren't willing to, once they're positive, that they may not feel comfortable getting the monoclonal antibody as a form of treatment. And that is difficult, especially when we know these things work, to hear, you know, this, the pandemic isn't political. It doesn't care where you live. It doesn't care how much money you make. It doesn't care which party you're in. COVID attacks people and it attacks the lungs. And what we have to do as, I think, healthcare providers is make sure that we are sharing accurate data and sharing accurate information to make sure that people can make the best choices possible.
Well, we have a clip from Cassie Lee, a patient care coordinator in the med-surg unit or medical surgical unit, who tells us about a memory that stands out to her during the beginning of the pandemic. Let's take a listen.
I'm in a patient's room, and they are desat. It's a COVID room, and they are desatting into, like, the upper 60s, low 70s. And I'm trying to get that patient taken care of, get their oxygen up, and I get a call from the upstairs telling me that I have another patient that's in the same situation, and you got to decide which patient am I going to take care of first, which obviously the one you're already with, but you got to get somebody into that room to make sure that they're okay and address their needs. And it just, some days it never ends with that.
Amy, what about the nurses in your hospital? Are they facing that sort of similar situation of trying to figure out who to treat first and all of that?
Absolutely. You know, this has been extremely difficult. And again, as I said, and Rachel agreed that we have all of the normal patients that are here. We have half of our patients currently admitted are COVID positive. But on top of that, we're getting ready to come into a flu season. We've seen RSV hit very hard with pediatric population. So having all of this compile, you become a little anxious about what's about to come. And then you see graphs that say our region isn't going to peak until the end of September. And you think to yourself, okay, how can we do more? How are we going to be able to manage this number of patients that's going to be coming in? And I think nurses, again, we want to care for patients. We want to do what's right by our patients. But I think nurses see that ahead of them, and they get anxious about it because they're worried about it. The nursing staff, it is a very close-knit group. I think across the nation, nurses band together. It's what we do. We are a family. And I think that you'll see that nurses step up and rise up to the occasion, but not without wounds, with those battle wounds. After this is all over, there will be battle wounds that we'll have to deal with. That emotional toll and that mental peace, it'll stay with you for quite a few years to come.
Rachel, speaking of sort of the mental, emotional toll that this is taking on nurses, how are the nurses doing at your hospital?
Well, you know, very similar to Amy's, you know, we're hanging in there. We've got to be that team, that cohesive team that supports one another, that pulls one another up when we've had a really rough day. And we are a group of people that support each other and hold each other together. I think they're extremely tired. They're exhausted because they don't see where the end in sight might be. The time to take a breather, the time to say, oh, things can actually feel like a normal shift again, because this pandemic has been so extended. And it's just the length of the situation we're currently in has just been so outstretched. It's not like we've had a natural disaster and we're able to work through it for a few weeks and then it's gone. You know, this has been ongoing for an extended period of time, and they're just extremely tired. They are just really experiencing symptoms of burnout and physical, mental, emotional exhaustion. And it's, you know, how do we support them through this? And like Amy said, after this, how do we really help them get through the scars?
We have another clip from Cassie, who tells us about how the pandemic has impacted her mental health. Let's take a listen.
It has been pretty mentally exhausting, not only physically, the last year, because you have patients that we now have visitors where they can come in a couple hours, two different times. But before, they didn't have, we didn't have visitors for those patients. So then you took a lot of that home with you, because these patients are like, am I going to die Don't Let Me Die, and they're alone in the hospital. And you don't, like, we didn't see that a bunch before. I work on a med-surg floor. Most of your patients are going to come in and they're going to, you know, like, it's going to be something that they're going to go home in a couple of days, like, or they might, depending on what it is, they're not going to stay there a long time. And, you know, you're going to, they're going to come in, they're going to get this treatment, and then they're going to go home. With the COVID patients, it's, they're going to, you're going to get them, and you don't know if they're going to go home. And so that's a lot of mental, takes a toll on your mental health. So just like Christy said, talking to other nurses, because nobody outside of your, like, healthcare workers know what you go, what goes on at work. You can try to, like, describe it, but they just don't get it.
Amy, that's a powerful statement there, that you can try to describe it, but people just don't get it. And that's got to be pretty isolating of a feeling.
It absolutely can be isolating. And again, why it's so important that nurses bond together and really work together. We have quite a few opportunities for that to happen. We have a RISE team here where when you experience those types of events, you can activate the RISE team. Trained individuals will come and have conversations with you, let you kind of vent, talk through what happened. Just not for that mental side. We have a pastor that is employed through our hospice program. They come over. They also allow you to talk and pray if you would want to be involved with that and really share your feelings. But it absolutely can be very draining. And again, there are times when you just feel defeated because you feel like you can't possibly do enough or you can't be enough for these individuals.
I mean, this sounds like the perfect recipe for burnout for anybody in a situation like this. Rachel, how would you say you're able to combat nurse burnout, or are you just seeing a lot of people leaving the field?
Well, I think you're seeing a little bit of both. We've seen nurses leave the field nationally and as a state, more so than we ever thought before. And so we really don't know how the projections are really going to look, to really understand the full impact of COVID on those that are leaving the workforce. But, you know, you have to be in tune and have resources that Amy talked about. You have to have chaplains and therapists and teams that can come together, you know, when there's a difficult situation or someone has had one of those rough days and really need to lean on someone to talk through their current mental state or emotional state. So they have an opportunity to voice their concerns with those that are in the moment with them that understand what their day-to-day looks like. Because it's very difficult because our experiences in the hospitals with COVID are very real. Those numbers are our numbers. Those patients are our patients. So when we see all of these things on the media or across social media platforms, whatever it looks like, you know, a lot of people want to talk to you about it outside of your workplace and ask all these questions or try to, present differing opinions. But it's very hard when that's your personal story. And these nurses, these are their personal stories and their personal journeys about what they've experienced in hospitals and what their patients have experienced. And so for them, it's almost like a re-traumatization every time they deal with those type of situations outside of work. And so we have to be here to support our staff through having various resources available to them when they need it.
We have a listener voicemail from Betsy who asks about staff retention at your hospitals. Let's take a listen.
This is Betsy in Terre Haute. I'd like to know from the chief nursing officers if the fact that both their hospitals have magnet status, if that is helping them to retain the staff that they have. Thank you.
All right, Amy.
Betsy did a little bit of homework. That's exciting to hear. absolutely. I think that having an environment, so magnet obviously is the highest designation that an organization can receive based on nurse-driven outcomes. And absolutely what we focus on when you're a magnet organization is the work environment that surrounds a nurse, making sure that, again, as Dean Newhouse spoke earlier, that you have the autonomy, that you have, that you can make decisions that you have around your care or your clinical care. I believe very, very strongly that as a four-time magnet designated organization, I believe very strongly that magnet does impact the vacancy rates that we have, the retention rates that we have. But I will tell you that COVID has impacted those numbers, and we are seeing nurses leave the field, completely leave the profession, or get away from direct patient care on the inpatient units and move to more of a clinic setting, or move to more of an outpatient setting where you're not really caring for these critical COVID patients. So while I do believe that Magnet makes a difference, I believe that COVID is absolutely impacting our retention rates.
Well, when it comes to what listeners will take away from the conversation today, Rachel, what do you hope they'll take away?
I think that the most important thing is that nurses are empaths. We really care about every single person that comes to us in a vulnerable state. And we want to do everything in our power as nurses, as nurse leaders, to ensure that we can take care of every person that walks through that door. So the burden that our frontline nursing staff, as well as nursing leaders, feel right now is very real and it's very raw. And we just want people to understand we're doing the very best we can, and that we need to reassure our healthcare workers and say thank you for what you do for all of those in healthcare right now. We really need that support, and that we're doing everything we can to possibly take care of every person that comes to us, but that we have to realistically know that healthcare and the standard of care doesn't look like what we all aspire it to look at it sometimes. And they just need to know we're doing our very best, and to be patient with us, and thank a healthcare worker, make them a meal, take it to their home, do something just to let them know how much you care, and just keep this in your mind and advocate for us and pray for us.
Amy, what about you? What are your thoughts on what you want listeners to take away?
I think Rachel really said it perfectly, but I will also add, as a healthcare worker, take care of yourself. I want your listeners to understand that, take care of yourself, because if you can do that, if you can get vaccinated, if you can wear your mask when you're not able to socially distance, if you can take care of yourself, then we won't have to take care of you here in the hospital. And while I would love to see all of your listeners and meet them and have conversations with them, I don't want to have to take care of them when they're here in critical care or on a ventilator or with COVID, because those interactions look very different.
And I 100% agree with you, Amy. You know, I do. I ask people to get the information, get vaccinated, social distance. That's the best thing that we can do right now to prevent not having resources, is not having COVID patients in our hospital, and it is preventable.
And I'm guessing that a lot of the misinformation that's out there kind of creates a lot more stress also for you in the nursing field and in the healthcare industry.
Yeah, I would say yes, that it does. And I would say it is important. I want people to be able to choose and make the choice for themselves. I absolutely do. But I want them to be able to really know the information, know the data, know the truth, and then to be able to make the best decision for them. You know, we've been dealing with this pandemic for a year and a half now. We know what works. We deal frontline with positive COVID patients, and we know what works. We know how to keep ourselves safe. We know what you need to do to keep yourself safe. That's masks, that's socially distancing, and that's vaccination. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for taking the time to join us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. And we want to thank you for all the work that you're doing and all of your staff and the hospitals. We really appreciate it. Amy Pettit, Vice President of Patient Care Services and Chief Nursing Officer at Schneck Medical Center in Seymour, and Rachel Spaulding, Chief Nursing Officer at Good Samaritan Hospital in Vincennes. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. And if you ever want to reach out to us, you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We also have a free smartphone app called All in Vox Pop. Just search for All in Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we will get back to you. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Miriam Sobe. This is All In.